मूकं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरी यत्कृपातं वंदे श्रीगुरो दीनतारिणं परमानंदमाधवं श्रीचैतन्य ईश्वरं। So welcome once again. I was hearing from few devotees recently also I heard, and before that also I was hearing that many of you have altered your dinner time just to attend these sessions. So Matajis are trying their best to cook as fast as possible. Some of you are finishing dinner before 7. Some of you are taking dinner after 8:30. So that makes me very nervous whenever I hear all this. So thank you very much. This shows your eagerness for Srimad Bhagavatam. So let's start from the place where we left, text 20. So ready everyone, text 20. So we're reading from Canto 7, Chapter 2, text 20. Shri Hiranyakashipu Uvacha Ambambahe Vadhu Putra Viram Marhata Shochitum Ripor Abhimukhe Shlagyaha Shuranam Vada Ipsitaha. Translation. So we read this translation last time, but I took it purposely. Hiranyakashipu said, "My dear mother, sister-in-law and nephews." So basically now Hiranyakashipu is speaking to whom? He's speaking to the wife of Hiranyaksha, his own mother. So wife of Hiranyaksha, her name is Rushabhanu, and their mother, that is Diti, and the nephews, that is the sons of Hiranyaksha. So he's speaking to them. And now he's saying, you should not lament for the death of great hero, for a hero's death in front of his enemy is glorious and desirable. So this is the first activity. Find out from the chapter 1, Bhagavad Gita, a similar shloka which talks about the death in front of his enemy or death in the battlefield is glorious and desirable for a kshatriya. Yes. So Bhaktivriksha leaders are requested not to post. All the others can find out. Even I'll try to find, and let's. Chapter 1, Bhagavad Gita. Okay, chapter 1, Arjuna is giving various reasons. If I'm not wrong, it's in chapter 2. Yeah, chapter 2, not chapter 1, sorry. Chapter 2. The shloka which talks about, it's really glorious to die on the battlefield. I found it. Okay, last 30 seconds. You have to be quick. Okay, 2. So 2:31. You should know that there is no better engagement for you. The apt verse is 2:32. O Partha, happy are the Kshatriyas to whom such fighting opportunities come unsought, unsought, opening for them the doors of heavenly planets. So basically, in this particular shloka, Krishna is saying that the death on the battlefield for a Kshatriya is very, very glorious. And that's what even Hiranyakashipu is saying. This is one of the nice quality of a Kshatriya. Kshatriyas will never take a step back. Whenever there is some opportunity for fighting on the battlefield, they will come forward and they will fight. In fact, even if they know that their strength is very, very less as compared to that of the opposite party, still they'll fight. That is called as Kshatriya spirit. So that's what even this shloka talks about. So we'll find similar shlokas now. Let's go to the next shloka. Text 21. So from Bhagavatam, text 21. My dear mother, in a restaurant or place for drinking cold water, many travelers are brought together, and after drinking water, they continue to their respective destinations. Similarly, living entities join together in a family, and later, as a result of their own actions, they are led apart to their destinations. So this is a very nice philosophical shloka. So in fact, the set of shlokas which are going to come now, they are very philosophical, very logical, and it also creates a lot of renunciation in the heart. So you see this particular shloka. It says that what is the relationship that we have with people who are around us, and that's what the shloka talks about. So now Hiranyakashipu has to pacify his mother, his sister-in-law, and his nephews. So that's what he's doing now. And he's going to speak in such a way that he's going to speak some logic by which they'll be convinced that, okay, the relationship which we had was temporary. And this is what he's going to convince now. And the first shloka which he's talking about, that particular thing is this. So we might have seen this particular thing that, so here, the example we might not be able to connect because it talks about a place for drinking cold water. So now all of us have our fridge, so we have individual this one. So this is about the olden days where there will be some place where the cold water would be kept for travelers. And all the travelers, when they're traveling, passing from one village to another, they would come to that place, they would sit, drink water, talk to each other, and then depart. Well, they'll start for their own respective places. Similarly, a place like a restaurant. So these restaurants are not those sophisticated restaurants that we have now, where you book your table and reserved board is put and then you come and sit. These are the local restaurants where you have a big table and many people sit on that and you don't know them. Yes, and many people sit on that and they start talking to each other. So these are like in villages, you'll find villages and towns. Or a similar thing, we can talk about a train journey or a bus journey. Suppose we are not traveling with family and traveling alone. And then you're heading to some place, and there are many people sitting around you. And then since you're alone and you're getting bored, and maybe at that time you were not in Krishna consciousness, because now we have so many things to do in the train. So the train starts, and then you do some activity, and you get bored, and then you start talking to people around, and now you have a good connect with everyone. Everyone around you have good connect, and then you know the names of people. And then you know what they're currently doing, what is their profession, where do they live, and who all are there in the family. And then you have got a very good connect. And finally, the station of one person comes, he gets down. The destination of other person comes and he gets down. And finally, almost everyone goes out. And because your station is the last station, you're sitting. So that's what the shloka talks about. It says that living entities join together in a family, and later, as a result of their own actions, they're led apart to their individual destinations. Sometimes people ask this question that will karma of parents affect the kids, or the siblings' karma will affect another sibling? So karma of any person will not affect the other person. So every person has to enjoy or suffer his own karma. Yes, there's something called as collective karma, by which people with the same karma would come together, similar karma would come together, and they would suffer or enjoy together. Yes. Or in the previous life, some give and take is remaining. So in this life, that give and take has to complete, so people come together. So this is what happens when people come together. And this is a very nice point to meditate on, especially when it comes to attachment. When it comes to attachment, this is a very nice point to meditate, that finally, everyone has got different set of karma and we have come together. So there is no point in getting attached, because the person whom I'm living with or who are around me, they are not eternal. They have their own journey. They started their own journey time immemorial. And now they're continuing the journey, and now they're just there with me as a part of my journey. And finally, the person is going to continue the journey alone. There's a very nice shloka. Let me see if I can recollect. Dhanani bhaumash pashuascha goshte bharya grahadwari jana smashane deha chitaya paraloka marge. So this particular shloka says, dhanani bhaumo. Previously, people would bury the wealth, this all the gold coins and other things. They'll put in a matka, they'll put in a pot, and they'll bury. So it's a dhanani bhaumo. So the money is remaining there only, wherever it is buried in the earth. So to translate that to the current context, the money will remain in the bank, wherever it is there, fixed deposit and or mutual funds or whatever. Yes, so that's there. Dhanani bhaumo pashuvascha goshte. So previously the wealth of people were pashu, the cows and the bulls and horses. Those were the wealth, and people would use them to travel around. So they would remain in goshta. They would remain in their own respective, whatever we call it, as the shade. And now if you currently translate that particular thing, all our cars will remain in our parking lot. Yes. Dhanani bhaumo pashuvascha goshte. Then bharya grahadwari. So this is a custom. When a husband leaves the body, so at that time, the wife is not allowed to go along with the body. So she's supposed to remain at home. This is the custom that was there. I don't know currently what is the thing that is followed. So bharya grahadwari. So max to max, she can come to which place? She can come to grahadwari. No, she can come to the door. That's it. And then jana smashane. So all the others who are there, all the people around, all the relatives and others, till what point they can come? They can come to the smashana, the crematorium ground, which is there. So they'll come till there. And then it says that deha chitaya. And this deha also, till when it will be there with us? Not on the chitta. That's it. And now on the chitta, what happens? Like in the Hindu custom or in Sanatana Dharma, the body is burnt. So when the body is burnt, the body will also leave. Now finally it says, now this jiva which is there, the soul which is there, paraloka marge, it's going to travel alone. Right? So the point that is made here is that finally a living entity has come alone and is going to go alone. Khaliyat ayate aur khaliyat jayenge. Yes. So we are not going to take anything. So the point that is made again and again in the Shastra is, there is no point of being attached and to be proud of anything that we possess currently in this life. Be it a beautiful body, be it a very nice wealth, or be it anything for that matter. Yes. Finally, we have come alone, without wearing even undergarments, and we're going to leave like that. Yes. Tell me, we were discussing in the pastime where Krishna appears. When Krishna appeared in Shankh Chakra Gada Padma, he was wearing a Pita Vastra, Vaijayanti Mala. There the question was asked, tell me which child appears like this? Does any child wear undergarment also while coming out of mother's womb? He comes nagna, he comes naked. And then while going also, he's naked. Because the first thing that will burn on the chitta is the clothes, right? They'll become naked for sure. And then the body will take some time to burn. So in this way, again and again, this one point has to be meditated on. That finally, what is going to happen to this body? And what is the benefit of being attached to whatever I possess? As soon as a person realizes this, a person becomes humble. And such a person can practice bhakti very nicely. That is the reason Krishna uses this very nice logic in the second chapter itself. And this is the most important concept of Bhagavad Gita. If anyone understands this body-soul concept, that person can get easily delivered from the clutches of birth and death. Easily. Only thing that we have to understand is we are not the body, we are spirit-soul. That's it. And everything else will fall in place. right? In fact, I was talking to one of my friend from who was following Islam. So he was telling me after namaz, they sit and they meditate on the qabr. Qabr is the burial place. So it seems they meditate on that. Then he was saying that many people cry, you know, when they meditate on that. Yes. So in every religion, you know, we'll find that there is some meditation on. Finally, the person is going to leave the body. What is going to happen? And why this meditation is important? When this meditation is done, so that time the person realizes that, you know, whatever sins I'm committing and you know, whatever I'm doing, finally, there'll be some, you know, some destination to that. Yes. And whatever I'm attached to, I'll not be able to take even a particle of it. Even a particle. Like suppose this Yamdutas come and then they put the Yamapasha on our neck. Our neck means the soul's neck. And then, you know, he's pulled out. He's trying to, you know, pull the soul out of the body. So at that time, the soul will say that, I just want to take a particle of gold because so many gold biscuits I've stored underneath my bed. So please help me. So nothing is going to happen. We cannot take even a particle of it. Yes, even a particle of it. If you remember, I told this analogy, allegorical story. So once a king was very, very puffed up. And then a sadhu wanted to teach him a lesson. So sadhu came running and he said, "Oh king, I have got a good news for you." And the king said, "What's that?" And the sadhu said, "After death, you're going to go to heaven." Then he said, "First, you have given me bad news that I'm going to die. And secondly, then you're giving good news. Please make it clear." And then after that, he went back and again he came and he came running and he said, "Oh king, I've got a sad news for you." "So what is that?" "In the heaven, there are a lot of mosquitoes." And the king became morose, saying, "Oh, I thought I'll enjoy that after death from here." Sadhu went back, he came back again. He said, "Oh king, I've got a good news for you. There's a mosquito net." King became happy. "Chalo, I'll be able to sleep peacefully." This is how you know, people meditate on their enjoyment. And then after that, again, the sadhu came running and he said, "I've got a sad news for you. There are a lot of holes in the mosquito net." Then the king said, "Oh, sadhu, tell me, what am I supposed to do?" He said, "Why, when you're dying, so that time, take a needle. Thread is already available there. And carry a needle with you from here and then you can, you know, just stitch it properly and then you can have a peaceful sleep." And the king said, "Oh, that's an amazing idea." And then the sadhu said, the king himself, now after a few minutes, he realized and he looked at sadhu and he said, "How can I take a needle? I cannot take anything from here." And sadhu said, "That's what I wanted you to realize. You cannot take even a needle. What are you proud of?" Right? So this is what it is talking about. Be it things or be it people, whatever it is, unnecessary attachment is not really recommended by Shastra. And the purport, Prabhupada is saying, Prakrite kriya manani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimodatma karta hamiti manyate. The bewildered soul, under the influence of three modes of material nature, thinks himself the doer of activities, which are in actuality carried out by the nature. We'll discuss about this in the future verses. All living entities act exactly according to the directions of prakriti, material nature, because in the material world, we are fully under a higher control. All the living entities in this material world have come here only because they wanted to be equal to Krishna in enjoyment and have thus been sent here to be conditioned by material nature in different degrees. So this is the only reason. Now, why are we here? Only reason. What is that reason? The reason is we wanted to be equal to Krishna in enjoyment. And Krishna sent us here. Theek hai, karo. Maja karo, maja maro. Yes, go and enjoy. And that's what we are trying to do here in this world. In the material world, a so-called family is a combination of several persons in one home to fulfill the terms of their imprisonment. As criminal prisoners scatter as soon as their terms are over and they are released, all of us who have temporarily assembled as family members will continue to our respective destinations. Another example given is that family members are like straws carried together by the waves of a river. Sometimes such straws mix together in whirlpools and later dispersed again by the same waves that they float alone in the water. Although Hiranyakashipu was a demon, he had Vedic knowledge and understanding. Thus, the advice given to his family members, his sister-in-law, mother and nephews was quite sound. The demons are considered highly elevated in knowledge. But because they do not use their good intelligence for the service of Lord, they are called demons. The demigods, however, act very intelligently to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam as follows. Atapumbir dvija shreshta varnashrama vibhagashah swanushtitasya dharmasya samsiddhir haritoshanam. O best among the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging his prescribed duties according to caste divisions and orders of life is to please the Lord Hari. To become a demigod or to become godly, whatever one's occupation, one must satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is a very nice point that is mentioned. So this particular purport and this particular shloka will, you know, almost make us detached, you know, from our family. But see, one thing you have to understand is that when it comes to devotees, there's a purpose that why we all have come together, be it a family or be it a devotee association or circle. There's a purpose. What is that purpose? The purpose is to perfect our life and go back to Godhead. So now when a materialist is attached to the family members, then it's of no use. Because finally, what is going to happen? Now till the point that they together, they would enjoy, and finally a person has to depart, you know, for the next destination. But when it comes to devotees, they have a very strong relationship eternally, because they are connected to Krishna. They're connected to Krishna. And all the family members, when they become devotees, when they start practicing bhakti, so they all are together practicing bhakti. And that attachment, which is coming because of attachment to Krishna, is the eternal attachment. Or that is a perfect attachment, not to have. Because now the attachment is not to the body, the attachment is to the soul and super soul. Right? So that is the difference between a devotee family and a materialistic family. So in a materialistic family, now a person unnecessarily attached to the family members is of no use. But when it comes to a devotee family, when we are attached to Krishna, automatically we are attached to each other on the platform of spirituality, where we are helping each other to develop and revive our relationship with Krishna. And once, you know, that is happening, then we are doing our duty. And anyone who does that duty perfectly, you know, is very, very dear to Krishna. Very, very dear to Krishna. So that is the difference between a materialistic family and a devotee family. So it is recommended that, you know, a person, a householder, for sure that person has to become a devotee. There is no doubt about that. If he doesn't become a devotee, then he's just living a life of animals, you know, Prabhupada says in different purports. Right? Let's go to the next verse. The spirit soul, the living entity, has no death, for he is eternal and inexhaustible. Being free from material contamination, he can go anywhere in the material or spiritual worlds. Okay, so let's do this activity first. The spirit soul, the living entity, has no death, for he is eternal and inexhaustible. Find out equivalent verse in second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So multiple verses you will get for this. Spirit soul, the living entity, has no death, for he is eternal and inexhaustible. Please post the shloka numbers. Okay. Take a minute. Okay, so we have multiple shlokas, so let me go through that. 212, what does 212 say? Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in future shall any of us cease to exist. So yes, so that says that the soul is eternal. Then text 16, those who are seers of truth have concluded that of the non-existent, that is the material body, there is no endurance. And of the eternal, the soul, there is no change. Yes, so here also it says the soul is eternal. 216. Next 217. That which pervades the entire body, you should know to be indestructible. No one is able to destroy that imperishable soul. Yes. So again, it says the soul is imperishable and inexhaustible. That is eternal and inexhaustible. What is the next shloka? What is the next number? 20. For the soul, there is neither birth nor death at any time. Yes. So no, has no death. So that is proved here. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. Is unborn, eternal, ever existing. So eternal and ever existing. So eternal and inexhaustible. Yes. He is not slain when the body is slain. Correct. 230. What does 230 say? He who dwells in the body can never be slain. Yes, the soul can never be killed. So soul is eternal. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin. Yes, 20. Correct. 20, 26. Okay, 24 also. 24 says, this individual soul is unbreakable and insoluble and can be neither burnt nor dried, is everlasting. Yes, everlasting and is eternal. So that's what talks about eternal and inexhaustible. 225. Yes, soul is invisible, inconceivable, and immutable. Knowing this, you should not grieve. Okay, 225 is not a very apt shloka for this. 213, 213 says, Yes, the soul is just changing from one body to another. Kaumaram, what is this? Deinosmin yathadehe. So this shloka says that the soul is passing from one body to another. So soul is not dead. 27. I think you guys are going to cover all the shlokas of second chapter. One who has taken birth is sure to die, and after death, one is sure to take birth again. Therefore, is unavoidable. Discharge of your duty, you should not lament. Okay, this talks about the body, not the spirit soul. Okay, 223 and 228. 223 says, okay, this is covered, so it's eternal. And 228 says, 228 also talks about the created beings are unmanifest in their being, beginning, manifest in their entering. So this also talks about the body more. Okay. So I think we have covered all the important shlokas. And 21. How can a person who knows that soul is indestructible and eternal? This is the apt shloka. Indestructible and eternal. Inexhaustible and eternal. That's what Hiranyakashipu is saying. So can you imagine Hiranyakashipu attended a Gita course session sometime in Satyuga? Being free from material contamination, he can go anywhere in the material or spiritual worlds. He is fully aware and completely different from the material body, but because of being misled by misuse of his slight independence, he is obliged to accept subtle and gross bodies created by material energy and thus be subjected to the so-called material happiness and distress. Therefore, no one should lament for the passing of the spirit soul from the body. So this is going to give a very in-depth knowledge and understanding about the soul. Let's try to get into the discussion now. Please be very attentive. Hiranyakashipu very intelligently described the position of soul. The soul is never the body, but is always completely different from the body. Being eternal and inexhaustible, the soul has no death. But when the same pure soul desires to enjoy the material world independently, is placed under the conditions of material nature and must therefore accept a certain type of body and suffer the pains and pleasures of this world. Pleasures thereof. Yes. So now you see this line, which is very nice. And we can have lots of discussion on this few lines itself, whatever we just read. It says that soul has no death. Now, if you properly analyze in our life, what is the biggest fear? Why are we all sitting inside our houses locked down? What is the biggest fear? The biggest fear is death. Yes. So I'm not encouraging you all to go out of the house. I'm just talking about the fear that we have, naturally implicit fear that we have. The implicit fear is I'll die. But it's very clear from the shloka which Hiranyakashipu is talking about, and also the shlokas that you all posted just now. It's very clear that soul is eternal. The soul can never die. It's very clear. Now, if the soul is eternal and the body is dying, then why are we really fearful? Because we are spirit soul, we are not the body. We are fearful because we have not realized that we are spirit soul and not this body. Unfortunately, due to the association with this body from time immemorial, like for example, in this life, you know, when we get a mobile phone, we say that this is my mobile phone. Right? We say this is my phone. And when it is lost, then whose phone it is? Or where was your phone before you got it? So just mine for some span, that's it. Similarly, this body which we have got is mine for some time. It is not something which we own forever. And since we accept this body for, you know, as our own, what happens? Whatever happens to this body, we start feeling that, yes, I'm going through that pain. See, what is the characteristic of soul? Soul is Sachit Ananda. Soul is always happy. That is what is the quality of soul. But why do we feel the pains and pleasures then? Because the body feels the pain and pleasure. It's not the soul. It's not the soul. So this is what we're discussing here. That as soon as a person comes to the platform of understanding that I am the spirit soul and not the body, he will become fearless in life. Fearless. Yes. And this fearlessness will come when a person starts practicing bhakti. Because only when a person starts practicing bhakti, a person can realize that he is spirit soul and not this body. But a person who is not practicing bhakti, like materialists who are not practicing bhakti, they'll always believe and they'll preach about the fact that this body, I am this body, and finally this body is going to get destroyed and everything will get destroyed. Everything else will stop. So why really worry? There is no next life. There is no previous life. Just enjoy. This is the only life. Yes, this is what people talk about. Why? Because they're convinced that they are this body and not spirit soul. So this one aspect should be very clear for devotees that we are not this body but spirit soul. And how can we realize this? By practicing day in and day out the spiritual practices, especially the chanting of the holy names. And now, why has the soul come here? The soul has come here only for one reason. And what is that? He wants to enjoy like Krishna. That's the only reason we all are here. Only reason. And look at what are we doing in bhakti. When we come to bhakti, the only thing that we are doing is, every session, the only thing we are trying to realize is that I am not the master, I am servant. Again and again, when a speaker hits us very nicely in the Bhagavatam class, what is he talking about? We are not the body, we are spirit soul, we are not Krishna, we are Jivatma, we are not ocean, we are a Bindu, that is we are drop, we are not the fire, we are just a spark. So we are trying to understand our position. So we are not Krishna and we can never become Krishna. This point has to be clear for all of us. It has to be ingrained now in our existence. As soon as someone wakes us up at night, we're in deep sleep and they ask, who are you? I'm Anu. And I'm a drop. I'm servant of Krishna. This is the answer that a devotee should give. That's how the system should be programmed now. Unfortunately, the desire that we have got, that I want to enjoy like Krishna, because of that we are here. And all the activities that we're doing in this world, all the activities are just telling that I'm trying to be Krishna. I'm trying to be Ishvara. I'm trying to be controller. Right? You look at everything that we do. For example, the things that we get for our enjoyment. As soon as we see something, we want to enjoy that thing. Because we are very clear that whatever exists in this world is for my enjoyment. This is what is the philosophy of various materialistic people. Whatever exists around, so that is for my enjoyment. Why for my enjoyment? Because I'm Ishvara. I'm equivalent to Krishna. We might not say this, but it's implicit in all of us. The system is programmed like that. That is the intense desire which is there in the heart. Intense desire. That is the reason we have the controlling tendency. Yes? We chastise people. We take it to our ego. And we feel, I'm someone really great. Why? Only one person is great, that is Krishna. But when it comes to us, we are not great. No, we are very, very small. But it's almost like a small person is trying to become really great. That is what is our current situation. And that's what we are trying to do in this material world. Trying to prove ourselves, I am the greatest. Everyone is doing that around. Everyone is doing that. Everyone is trying to prove I'm better than you. Have you ever noticed what is the happiness that we get in our life? The happiness that we get in our life is, I'm better than other person, so I'm happy. Like other person has something and I've got 0.1% more than him. He earns something, I earn 1 rupee more than him. Is or whatever. My relative has got this, I've got a better brand of that. And even when we have ceremonies or whatever. So what is the happiness that a person gets when a person comes to marriage ceremony or something? I have dressed myself better than the other person. Yes. It's not the happiness that two people are getting married. No, only those two people on the stage, they're happy, except for others. All of them are happy in their own world. So please analyze this happiness. What is the happiness that we're getting in our life? The happiness is the happiness of delta difference that is there. The delta difference between what we have and what others have. That is the happiness. Please analyze. Please analyze and make a note sometime. Whenever you feel happy, whenever you're very happy in life, ask a question to yourself. Why am I happy now? And then apart from bhakti, in bhakti when you're happy, obviously you're not going to think, I'm chanting 64 rounds, this person is chanting 32 rounds. I don't think that is going to happen. But I'm talking about the material aspect. In life when we are materially happy, so at that time, you have to ask this question. Why am I really happy? And then when you scratch a bit, you'll find the delta. The delta difference between the two people. Yes. What is the happiness of promotion all about? I have moved up as compared to others. That is the happiness. Yes. I've got a hike as compared to others. That is the happiness, right? So this is the happiness that is there. That is there in this world. And why are we really getting happiness out of it? Because we're trying to prove that I'm better than you. I'm better than you. I'm better than you. I'm better than you. I'm better than you, O Krishna. That is what we are doing in this world. And when we come to bhakti, what are we doing? We're trying to understand that I am just a servant who is meant to serve. And I'm actually good for nothing. Krishna is great. I am incapable only because he is giving me energy. My body is working. Right? So in this way, this is the understanding that a devotee has to get through different analysis. And then the next thing that says is, this is another, we are still discussing one line. Comma, Prabhupada has put all the concepts in one line. And then Prabhupada says, he's placed under the conditions of material nature and must therefore accept a certain type of body and suffer the pains and pleasures thereof. This is also described by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 13:22. Karanam guna sangosya sad asad yoni janmasu. The living entity is born in different families or species of life because of being infected by the modes of material nature. When conditioned by the material nature, the living entity must accept a certain type of body which is offered by nature under the direction of Supreme Lord. This is a very deep concept. Just last Thursday, I gave a session on this for 1 hour on this particular aspect of three modes of material nature. So please listen very carefully. This we have already dealt in our Gita course session, but something deeper than what we spoke in Gita course. Let's try to understand. So, see, when a person comes to this material world, when the Jivatma comes to the material world, what happens? When the Jivatma comes to the material world, it's not that by the contact of the matter around, the person gets contaminated. It's because of the three modes of material nature, the person gets contaminated. Now, most of the things will get bouncer if you're not attentive. Yes. Three modes of material nature. What are those? Sattva guna, Raja guna and Tama guna. Okay. Now, when will we get affected or infected by the three modes of material nature? That is the question. It all depends on what is our desire. Depending on that, we'll get infected by the three modes of material nature. And this word infected is very, very important because when you get infected by something, you get diseased. Yes. So Prabhupada uses this very clearly, infected. So when you get infected by a virus, we get disease. Similarly, when we get infected by three modes of material nature, from our normal condition, we move to a diseased condition. Okay. Now, how does this happen? So when a living entity comes to this world, and suppose a living entity is liberated like Prabhupada, he will not be touched by three modes of material nature. Why? Because his desire is to serve Krishna. That is his desire. So when will the three modes of material nature infect us? When we have desire for sense gratification. When we have a desire that I want to enjoy this world, sense gratification and so on and so forth. At that time, the three modes of material nature will act on us. Okay. But now why three modes of material nature have to act on us when we have a desire for enjoyment? There's another concept we are going to know. So when a living entity desires, so what does Paramatma do? Paramatma will sanction. Depending on the karma credits, Now, if you have enough karma for that particular desire, no, Lord will sanction. It's almost like you go to purchase something and you come to the counter. If you have enough credits in your wallet, then you can buy that particular thing. Similarly, here. So when you have enough credits and you have desire something, then for sure, no, Paramatma will sanction. And then Paramatma sanctions, Paramatma orders the material nature Prakriti to manifest the desire of the living entity. So living entity is not doing anything. Only thing that the living entity is doing is it's just desires. So suppose I desire something good, you know, Krishna. Suppose I desire that I want to eat rasgulla. This is what is my desire. Okay. Prasadam. So I desire that. Now what happens is, suppose if my the karma credit supports this desire, Lord will sanction. What will Prakriti do? Prakriti will manifest everything. Now, depending on the person's desire, either mode of goodness, mode of passion, or mode of ignorance will start acting. Like the other day, I was giving example. Now, I have a desire to sleep. Okay. And now, Paramatma has sanctioned. Now, for sleeping, I need a setup like that, right? Now, suppose, you know, you are, there is a very energetic setup around. Very, very bright setup, very nice. How can we sleep then? We'll not get sleep at all because of that. So when we desire that we want to sleep, automatically the mode of ignorance will act on us. By the mercy of the Lord, the mode of ignorance will act on us prominently, and then automatically the person will go to sleep. When the person desires to eat rasgulla or fruits or whatever, that is in the mode of goodness. So the person desires that, the mode of goodness will act on that person. So even if a very spicy item is kept, and a rasgulla is kept besides that, the person will be driven to rasgulla because now the mode of goodness is acting. And if suppose the person has got a desire to eat something very spicy, so mode of passion will act and the person will be driven to that place where very, very spicy things are kept. So in this way, whatever we desire, Lord is sanctioning depending on our karma credits, and he's ordering Prakriti to manifest that desire by controlling the living entity with three modes of material nature. Hope this is clear. How does three modes of material nature control a person? So whatever we desire, depending on that three modes of material nature will influence us. Like, you know, when we desire that I want to earn more money. So what is that? Which mode will act on us now? Mode of passion will act on us now. Yes. And then, you know, we'll start running. We'll just start running around. And another thing is there, a very important concept. So now, depending on our past desires of past life and our past activities, we have got a certain type of body which is already programmed in one of the modes. Either we have got a mode of goodness body or mode of passionate body or mode of ignorance body. Okay, depending on past desires. Now let's try to understand this very important concept. If in the past life, suppose, if we would have lived a very animalistic life, just eating, sleeping, mating, defending, in complete ignorance. So the next life, the person will get a body of full of ignorance, and that is animal body. So animals are by default in ignorance. By default in ignorance. Okay. And suppose we have lived a very, very pious life in the past. Very pious and, you know, mode of goodness life. And the desires are also in the mode of goodness. To enjoy higher pleasures. So person will be taken to the next level, that is the heavenly planet. And in the heavenly planet, the person will be given the body of a demigod or the heavenly being, the celestial being body. Now, the celestial being body is always or prominently in mode of goodness. And in this earthly planet, now we have got mode of passion, mode of ignorance, mode of goodness body combined. Here, that's how it is when it comes to human form. And that's the reason you find sometimes people are naturally passionate right from childhood. I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to do this, I want to do that. And sometimes naturally the kid is lazy. Naturally. No, the parents are trying the best, put water on the face and, you know, try to make him active, send him to this classes, that classes, but still the kid is always. Now, because that body is programmed like that, he's into mode of ignorance most of the time. And sometimes you'll see the child would be completely in mode of goodness right from the childhood. Always peaceful. Aspirations are also very nice. Where he wants to eat very fresh food and other things. Yes. And then his mood is also very nice, where he naturally has respect for parents and elders and others. Naturally, there is no training that is given. Naturally, that person comes because his body is designed now in the mode of goodness. Now, what happens is this particular shloka says, Guna Sangha. Now, when we start associating with people around us who are in different gunas, like suppose we are in mode of passion or mode of ignorance, okay, and then we come in the association of devotees who are mostly dominated by mode of goodness. So what happens, as soon as we come in the association of devotees, automatically, even if our body is designed to be passionate or ignorant, now we will get tuned to that mode of goodness. So there will be slight deviation in our nature. Now, instead of being passionate or ignorant, now we start coming to mode of goodness. And if we associate more and more with devotees, what will happen? Finally, most of our existence will turn into mode of goodness. Very simple example, you know, which we were giving in the Thursday class was, now a student is very lazy, okay, in the school. Suppose second standard, third standard, the student is very lazy, not doing his work properly, completely in mode of ignorance. The teacher notices that this person is not studying. The teacher will put him, now he'll change the position, the place of the person, and he'll put that lazy person besides a very studious person. Now, because of the association of the studious person, the lazy boy who was there, even he will start changing and he will also start studying. He'll see, Arey, this person always studies, even I should do that. Now, the studious boy will ask, Did you complete the homework? And he said, No, I've not done. Can you please help? And then the person will start doing it. Even after going home, the thing that will remain in the boy's head would be, Oh, my partner will be doing it, so even I have to do. And without his notice, what is happening? From mode of ignorance, he's shifting to mode of goodness. Yes. Now, when a person is in mode of goodness, and then he starts, he gets a job in Bangalore, he comes to Bangalore, and he gets into a very, very fired up corporate setup. He's in mode of goodness, and then when he comes to that corporate setup, what happens? The manager is saying, Deadline, you have to complete the work at this time, you have to complete the work at this time. Do it, speed up, speed up, speed up. Meetings after meetings after meetings, and the person has no option but to move to mode of passion because of the association which is in mode of passion, right? So we might have a natural setup. Our body might be naturally designed for something, but at times, the person will keep moving to different modes, depending on what is the current association. Last example regarding mode of ignorance. Now, suppose a person is in mode of goodness. And he doesn't drink alcohol. But there's a drunkard, always tuned, not tight. He's in his own world, and then he has, five times in a day, he'll go to bar and take alcohol, and he'll be always tuned. And there's a mode of goodness person is associating with him. Now, when the mode of goodness person is a bit weak at heart, so when he's associating with the mode of ignorance person, and then he's going and accompanying him in the bar, and the mode of goodness person is completely determined, I'll never drink. And every day is going with that person to the bar with the mood of changing that person. Okay. Now, what is happening? He's associating with the person who is in mode of ignorance and he's entering into a setup which is completely mode of ignorance, that is the bar or a pub. And now every day is going, and what is happening slowly and steadily from the mode of goodness, this person is pulled down to mode of ignorance. Now, when he's pulled down to the mode of ignorance, what is happening? Slowly, the desire that is there, that is changing. He had come to change that person. Now he's getting a desire to change the glass of cold drink into a hot drink. Now he starts desiring that, I'll also take maybe a little bit of this, little bit of this and that and so on and so forth. Yes. So this is called as change of modes depending on one's desire and association. So association will decide our desire, and the desire will be sanctioned by Paramatma. And Paramatma will order Prakriti, and Prakriti will manifest either of the three modes, mode of goodness, passion, ignorance. And this is very clear that pure ignorance, pure passion will never act. It's a combination. It's almost like, no, I'm in mode of ignorance, suppose. So maybe 60% is mode of ignorance, 10% may be mode of goodness, and the rest will be mode of passion. So when I say a person is in mode of ignorance, I'm saying prominent one is mode of ignorance. This is what I'm saying, right? So it's a very, very important concept. So what do we learn from here? We learn that Sangha is very, very important. What Sangha are we in? Suppose if we are in the devotee Sangha, what happens is without our notice, even if our body is designed because of our past desires and karma, even if our body is designed for mode of ignorance and passion, we'll surely move to mode of goodness. And the example is all the hippies. The body of hippies was surely designed, you know, for being in ignorance. So they were always drug addict and this and that. You know, but when they come in association of a person like Prabhupada, who was like above all the three modes in pure goodness, automatically these people were transferred, you know, to very great height, right? To higher than the mode of goodness. So now suppose if we decide that, I don't want to be in these three modes of material nature. Because only because we are in three modes of material nature, are you understanding? We are controlled tightly by the three modes of material nature. Tightly. So whatever mode is currently acting, we'll act according to that. And people say, I'm independent. Can you imagine the irony here? The person is saying that I'm independent, but he's tightly controlled by the three modes of material nature. When can the person be independent? When he's freed from the three modes of material nature. And how can a person be freed from the three modes of material nature? The root was the desire, right? Because of the desire, everything is started, right? So if the desire changes, automatically the three modes of material nature will not act. What should be the desire then? The desire should be attaining Krishna this very lifetime as soon as possible. And when this desire is there, the person does not want to enjoy this world. Now the person just wants to serve Krishna. And when he gets a desire to serve Krishna all the time, now what would Paramatma do? Paramatma would sanction. But Prakriti cannot act because now the desire is spiritual and Prakriti can act only on matter. Only on material desire she can act. Now she cannot act. Now the strings which were there of mode of goodness, passion, ignorance, she has to cut those. Now she cannot do anything. Yes? And now directly the person will be controlled by Krishna. Krishna has no option. Now he'll directly control. And that's what happened with Prahlad Maharaj. I was sharing this, that Prahlad Maharaj, anyways it will come. At that time also we'll discuss this point. One of the tag that is given to Prahlad Maharaj is Krishna Graha Grihit Atma. Krishna Graha Grihit Atma. Now when we say that, I've got Rahu Graha or Ketu Graha, Rahu Ketu ka prabhav hai mere jeevan mein. So all bad things are happening. But the most inauspicious graha is Krishna Graha. The most blackish graha, the most blackish planet. Yes. And when this graha comes on a person, the person goes mad completely. And that is the reason Prahlad Maharaj was completely mad. He would just laugh anytime, he would cry anytime, jump in ecstasy, dance in ecstasy, roll in the ground. But one thing was there, that he was completely satisfied within the heart. Why? Because Krishna Graha, so Krishna Graha, that is Krishna Grihit Atma. Krishna has captured that person. So when a person becomes a devotee, when a person starts practicing bhakti very nicely, what happens? He'll be captured not by three modes of material nature. He'll be captured. I mean, he'll be embraced by Krishna and Krishna will take care of him personally. So that is the difference between a devotee and a materialist. So we might see even a devotee is doing same activities like a materialist. Even he will be eating, sleeping, he'll be going for work and other things. But he's completely different as compared to a materialist because a devotee is not controlled by three modes of material nature. A devotee is controlled directly by Krishna, whereas when it comes to a materialist, he's controlled by three modes of material nature. Yes. So that's what is talked here about three modes of material nature. So the desire has to change. This is the thing that I'm putting it forward. So we have to change our desire. Enough of enjoying this material world. Whenever we see anything, the first thought, at least artificially, we should do it now. It is said, fake it till you make it. Yes, fake it till you make it. See, we don't have desire to serve Krishna. Let's be frank. At least I don't have. But fake it till you make it. No, fake it. No, whenever you see something, no, you see that you see a nice juicy fruit, a juicy mango in front of you. And then your mouth is watering. And then suddenly, you remember the class that we had on Friday. And then you understand, oh, no, it's a desire for myself. Then you change your desire. Let me offer this to Krishna and then let my mouth salivate. Then you offer it to Krishna. So now what are you doing? Artificially, you're trying to get a desire to serve Krishna. But with time, since we are associating with Krishna, this desire will become natural. And then the three modes of material nature cannot act. then the person, if three modes of material nature is not acting, person is independent. He can serve Krishna the way he wants. He can serve Krishna to any extent that he wants, right? So in this way, the person becomes independent. So when a person comes to bhakti, the person becomes independent, not dependent or controlled. So in this way, we see that the three modes of material nature are caused, or they start infecting a person only when the desire in the heart is for sense gratification. I hope this is clear. If you have any question regarding this topic, this is a very deep topic which I have taken today. If you have any questions, please post in the group. We'll discuss more on this. So let's complete this purport and finish today's session. Ishvara sarva bhutanam riddheshe arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantra rudhani maya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. The body is just like a machine, and according to the living entity's karma, he is offered a particular type of machine to move here and there under the control of material nature. Now, any time you're going to read purports of Srila Prabhupada, it's going to be very clear for you. Very clear. Why have we got this machine? And why three modes of material nature are acting on us? And then, this continues until he surrenders to Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when I say surrender to Supreme Personality of Godhead, what am I talking about? I'm talking about the desire to serve Krishna only. That is called a surrender to Krishna. Now what happens when he surrenders to Supreme Personality of Godhead? So at that time, until he surrenders, the conditioned soul is carried from life to life by arrangement of material nature. One body to another, to another, to another. Now so many bodies we have taken in the past. All 84 lakh species we have covered. There's no species that is still left. Now if we think, see, Krishna has created all the species. I should do justice to it. I should go to every species and come. So we have gone to all the species. And finally, we have got the topmost form. That is a human body which is inclined towards doing bhakti. Topmost body this is that we have got. Topmost body. And now when we have got this body, finally what we have to do is work on our desires. Yes. And when we work on our desires, then done. Then we have no other option but to become independent, and three modes of material nature will not act on us. And finally, the person at the end of life will go back home back to Godhead. Because finally, even in this life, the person will attain Krishna. So with this, I would like to stop and take questions. So today we covered a lot of important concepts. Okay. I hope this is the question. The first question is, Krishna also will be right along with the soul. Huh, obviously, Krishna is there. Krishna is always there with the soul. When the soul travels from one body to another. So there, in that particular shloka which I had quoted, there only material aspects were talked about. So we didn't talk about Krishna there as Paramatma. Yes, Krishna is there always with the soul. But we are not attached to Krishna, no. Krishna is just coming behind. No, He is not even given any importance, but still is coming behind to help the soul. But I was talking about those things which you are attached to. So I talked about the wealth and the car and the people in the house and the body and other things. What about the karma in husband and wife relationship, Prabhu? Don't they share karma, as I have heard that it's the same two persons who come together as husband and wife for seven lifetimes? So see, when does two people come together? We have to understand that. I don't know how many lifetimes they come together. Obviously, there are some vratas which people do to get the same spouse for next seven lifetimes. But I have not come across that, nor I've read about it in Shastra till now. But one thing that we have to understand is, when does two people come together? When there is some give and take left over. So now some give and take is still remaining. And for sure, when husband and wife, some give and take will be there. So next life, they have to come together. Or with the kids, some give and take will be there, which is still remaining. Right? But this give and take completely ends when everyone in the family starts practicing bhakti. There is no give and take at that time, because only give and take that is happening is with Krishna. Right? So that's an important aspect. So when does husband and wife come together? Because when they have pending things, that has to be completed, right? So somewhere the person has left some aspects to be completed, and they come together, they complete whatever remaining. But unfortunately, since they don't have knowledge, I mean, talking about the materialists, since they don't have knowledge about this karma aspect. So they complete the give and take and they start a new give and take. Yes, they start a new give and take and again they come back. So the husband and wife, you know, they might change the roles in the next life. The husband might become wife and wife might become husband. And the kids are there. So, you know, the kids might take the position of parents in the next life. And, you know, they might take the revenge what parents have done in this life. So this give and take in the family will go on. Will go on. And that's how, you see, anyone whom we meet in our life and we get connected to, yes, we have some pending aspect with that person. And similarly, even with the devotee. You know, when we meet a devotee also, so some service is still left that we have to render to that devotee. So we have come together. When suppose, you know, we meet our guru, we accept someone as our guru. So it's not that the first lifetime we are accepting that person as a guru. From past lives, you know, we have had that person as our guru, but now we have not served him properly. We have not served him properly. And now this lifetime, again, an opportunity is given when the person serves the guru very properly and goes back to God. So that's the point. Now, seven lifetimes and all is that number, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. If an innocent small kid pray Krishna and asked him to remove corona from the world, will Krishna listen to his prayer? See, Krishna will reciprocate with everyone's prayer. No doubt about that. Yes. But here, now innocent small kid, if you're talking about an innocent small kid like Prahlad Maharaj, then it will work. I don't know, I shouldn't say this, but then to put it as it is from the Shastra, so no kid is innocent. Why? Maybe he'll appear innocent, but that kid also has a past. Yes, also has a past. With respect to that, we cannot call, if we connect the karma of the past, then we cannot call the kid as innocent. But if you just consider the kid of this lifetime, yes, the kid is very innocent. Yes. But if that particular kid is a pure devotee, then Krishna will be pulled down, you know, to that level. You know, like he was pulled down to the pillar and, you know, he had to come from the pillar. Yes, if suppose Prahlad Maharaj would have said that my Lord is there up in the ceiling, Narasimha Dev would have come from the ceiling. If you would have said that my Lord is there on the floor, in the floor, he would have come opening the floor. Yes. So that is the difference between a pure devotee and a normal, you know, jiva. But for sure, now when it comes to a kid less than the age of 11, when they offer some prayers, those prayers, if those are selfless, and mostly it is selfless only, yes, For sure, you know, Lord will get some things done, you know, in that prayer. So yes, when small kids pray, you know, that is effective. But, you know, when it comes to a big change like this, because removing corona is like delivering the entire world. So that needs a very powerful devotee. Yeah, a powerful devotee. Yes. Yeah, if a small kid prays to the Lord that please give me a chocolate, yeah, Lord will give. So he'll fulfill that desire. Fear of death is also due to unfulfilled responsibilities. How should one overcome that? I don't know. You know, whenever these topics come, automatically, you know, the answers will get into the brahmachari mode. I don't know how to answer this question. Unfulfilled responsibilities. Which purport is that where Prabhupada... I'm not remembering that purport where Prabhupada clearly says that we have forced responsibility on ourselves. I think this comes in 7th chapter. Yes, got it. For 7th chapter, go to shloka number 15. Go to shloka number 15. So, I'm not answering. Prabhupada is answering. Yes. So, Prabhupada says in... when he's describing about mudas, go to that paragraph where Prabhupada is talking about the mudas. There's a one in the bracket that is put. Go to that particular shloka. So there Prabhupada says, see this. Most often those who work very hard day and night to clear the burden of self-created duties, say that they have no time to hear of the immortality of the living being. So Prabhupada says that the burden of self-created duties. So most of the responsibilities and duties in our life is self-created. It is not given by God. That's what Prabhupada is saying here. So we have to understand which responsibilities are really given to us as our duty and which we have created, you know, by our own self. And then we have to differentiate between the two, and then, you know, we can understand. But then one thing is there, that when it comes to fear of death, it's not because of unfulfilled responsibilities or something. I really doubt about it. Fear of death is mostly because my enjoyment is going to end now. That is the fear of death. When we say unfulfilled responsibilities, you know, when the person is going to die, he'll forget about all the responsibilities. Maybe he'll get some thing about, oh, how will my kids live and etc. etc. But that's okay. But more than that, the fear that is there is I'm going to leave this body, which is given, which is very apt for sense gratification. That is the fear that we have. That is the fear. And the fear which is associated with sense gratification is attachment. Oh, I've got so many things that is there around, now I'm going to lose all these things. That is the fear that is there. But when a person becomes devotee, you know, he understands everything belongs to Krishna. He starts using everything in service of Krishna. And when the time of death comes, you know, he just, he's happy. And then before Krishna says come, he's out of the body. It's like, it is, the description is given about Narada Muni. So Narada Muni, when he was there as the son of the maid servant in the past life, so he was doing devotional service very nicely. Long story, cut short. He goes to the forest and he starts doing devotional service very intensely. And then one day, when he was doing devotional service, his body falls down. It means he didn't notice also that the body fell down, because he ascended back to Goloka. He ascended back to Krishna. He didn't even notice that death has come. Right? When it comes to Dhruva Maharaj, you know, sometime later we'll talk about Dhruva Maharaj. Or maybe after Prahlad Maharaj's pastime, we'll take Dhruva Maharaj. So in Dhruva Maharaj's pastime, you know, we see that the death personified, Dhruva Maharaj could see the death personified come. But what he did was, he was so fearless, he stepped on the head of the death personified and he climbed the Pushpak Vimana, you know, which had come to take him. So when does the person become fearless? When he becomes a devotee. And what do you mean by becoming a devotee? Completely dependent on Krishna. So when we're dependent on ourselves and we think I am the doer who's supposed to make sure that everything is done around me, because everything is given to me to do. And when he starts thinking like that, instead of thinking it's Krishna who will actually do it, not through me. So when a thought comes like this, then the person is stuck. When the person has complete faith on Krishna, then there is no problem. No, Krishna, you take care. No, I want to come back home. Right? I think this happened in the life of Sridhar Swami or something. One acharya. So, you know, his wife died. She gave birth to a child and his wife died. And now Sridhar Swami is thinking that now I'm supposed to take sannyas, but now this child is small. You know, what should I do? I'm not understanding. And then he thought, oh, child is very small. I have to take care of him. And then, oh, this is not valid for us. Sridhar Swami is a very great personality. Very great personality was written commentary on our Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and other things. So we cannot think also we can do that what he did. So what Sridhar Swami saw was the child is lying down crying and he thought, oh, I have to take care of this child, so forget about taking sannyas now. But then, you know, he saw there was a newborn lizard on the wall. And he saw that newborn lizard had just taken birth from the egg and has come out and it is just crawling, not able to walk also, but still it put outside, it you know, removed its tongue and it swallowed an insect. And at that time, Sridhar Swami saw that Lord has given intelligence for everyone. He has given intelligence to the small lizard. For sure, he would give intelligence to this boy also. He thought like that and left the home. And obviously, you know, Lord took care of the child because he had so much of faith on the Lord. Yes. So again, I'm saying this is not, you know, applicable to us. We don't have even a tinge of faith on the Lord. We are trying to get. We have a particle of faith. We are trying to enhance that particle. So, I don't know if I've answered your question or I've confused you more. Okay, if one stops desiring, then one or another life, he will be automatically get delivered to spiritual world. See, we cannot stop desiring. Please understand. we can never stop desiring in our life. Either you can desire for sense enjoyment, or you can desire to give enjoyment to Krishna's senses. Or either we want to enjoy our senses, or we want to give enjoyment to Krishna's senses. So these two aspects are there. Either you desire this or you desire this. You can never become desireless. This desireless concept comes in the monist philosophy, the Buddhist philosophy. It doesn't come, which is not valid according to Shastra. Because we can never become desireless. Yes. So when we change our desire from sense gratification to serving Krishna, then your statement is correct. That if not in this lifetime, then surely in some lifetime, we'll go back to God. But this has to start. This has to start. But we don't talk about next life. In this very lifetime, as soon as possible, we want to attain Krishna. Yes. In Navavidha Bhakti, both Shravanam and Kirtanam is there. Both are good only. Okay, so this is a statement. Yes, you're correct. Shravanam, Kirtanam, both are good. If a person wants to earn money to serve the Lord, does he still fall into the board of passion? Now, it should be very clear to that person for whom is he earning. Like in case of Prabhupada's disciples, when ISKCON was first established. If you all remember, you know, we covered that topic, the establishment of ISKCON. Yes. So after that, now they have to pay the rent of that 26 Second Avenue flat, which was there, or that gift shop, which was there, Masala's gift shop. So for that, the disciples of Srila Prabhupada would go and work as taxi drivers, as waiters in the restaurant, and so on and so forth. They would go on and they would hand over everything to Srila Prabhupada. Everything. Yes. And then Prabhupada will use it in service of Krishna. So this is called as earning money to serve Krishna. But, you know, also it is mentioned in Shastra, when a person is a grihastha, yes. Now there is a very heavy amount that is mentioned for donation. So Shastra says 50% of the amount should be given in donation. Yes, but anyways, you know, we can look at our practicality of the house and finance and think about it. So when a person starts giving donation from the part, you know, whatever he has earned, you know, to the temple work, the preaching work which is there. So what happens is the money gets purified. And slowly and steadily, since he is parting with the hard-earned money, he starts getting detached from the hard-earned money. And then slowly he understands, I'm living my life for Krishna. With time, he'll be able to understand. With time. So it's not that he thinks that, no, I'm earning for Krishna and suddenly he'll come into mode of goodness or something. Yes, he'll be in mode of passion. But the results that he's getting, he's offering to Krishna. So slowly he'll be put into mode of goodness. Because all the donation that he's giving, for that he'll get Sukriti. And that Sukriti will help the person not to become an intense devotee. And devotee means mode of pure goodness. Right? So first he'll come to goodness and then he'll go to pure goodness. When do we sense our desire is not being fulfilled and move forward, not looking for that? Okay, good. You gave an example. One person is appearing for civil exam, not successful, first couple of attempts. Where do draw a line? There are no more attempts and move forward. Now, this is a very relative question. Now, this depends from person to person. That person should be humble enough to accept that if he's not able to clear, that you know, this is not my cup of herbal tea. He has to understand that particular thing. And then he has to just give it up, you know, after whatever attempts you want to give. And obviously, practical things also he takes care about the family background and other things. Just imagine if he just keeps giving exams year after year, who will take care of the family? So he has to take care of all these things. So this question that you've asked is more of practical stuff as compared to the inner desire which is there. So the sense of our inner desire not being fulfilled, so it's more of I wanted to drive an Audi car, or I wanted to live in a palatial bungalow or whatever, and the person dies. Then depending on the karma, he will surely get a palatial building or whatever. If he has got a good karma, he'll take birth in a very nice family, or he'll become a cockroach in that particular place. If he has the karma of a cockroach, simple. The Lord will fulfill that desire, you know, somehow the other way. Yes. So in this way, I would take the approach to answer your question. I hope this answers your question. Okay. Is it true for neophyte devotee also that the mode of material nature will not act? So what exactly is the benchmark that when one is freed from the modes of material nature? When all the entire existence is in service of Krishna. then the person will be freed from material modes of nature. Yes, so that is the answer to your question. If a person is conditioned to get materially educated for the sake of basic needs and then prioritize Krishna at the top because it is considered as mundane into ignorance of subtle science, please suggest how can we satisfy both bhakti and education? There's a nice question from a student. So see, the thing is, when it comes to students, I give a different answer altogether. Since we are students, then that student has to study properly and side by side keep doing bhakti. Similar is valid for the person who is working and earning. So he has to keep working and he has to keep doing bhakti. So bhakti cannot be stopped for anything. And now, why can't we give up our work or job? Because we don't have complete faith on Krishna. Yes. And complete faith on Krishna will come with long practice. No, not that easy. Yes. So till then, the person should continue. Should literally study nicely or work nicely. Yes. And the result has to be used in service of Krishna. That is very, very important. Now, currently, whatever we are doing, now we are doing it because we want to maintain this body. So that result has to be offered to Krishna. So we have to find out innovative ways in which we can offer the results back to Krishna. So as a student, when you study nicely, when you score well, there is a high opportunity for preaching. So when you preach, having a high qualification, people would listen because materialists first see the material qualification. So they would see, oh, okay, this person is really highly qualified and then he's speaking about Bhagavad Gita. Oh, I should listen to him. Right? So like that. This is what Prabhupada would say. Okay. The basic give and take remaining. Is it correct to assume that people who we have close relationship with were deep relationship in past life? Yeah, but obvious. That's but obvious. We know that we are not body but soul. Yeah, we know theoretically. Yes. Which is eternal and hence we need not fear. However, we are unable to realize it actually. Why? Is it because we don't carry the remembrance when the soul moves ahead and hence we lose the hypothetical logic of identity? How to overcome this? Does constant hammering of these shlokas and purport help, or only when we actually accept that we have a better position with the most beautiful Krishna after this life attract us and that attraction remove our fear? Only one way, Prabhu. One way is doing intense devotional service. By doing intense devotional service, the person will come above the bodily platform. Then he'll realize that he's not the body, spirit, soul. Because he starts realizing Krishna. So when he starts realizing the supreme spirit, for sure he'll realize that he's that minute spirit. And he is not the body. So currently we are not able to realize that I'm not the body, I'm spirit, soul. Because we are not yet practicing bhakti intensely. With time it will happen. So no worry about that. No, with time, we have to just keep doing whatever we're doing. We have to just keep doing intensely, bhakti. And with time, we'll realize this particular aspect. When we are practicing some amount of bhakti, and if due to our material desires, we fall down, do we see it 100% as our fault? Or it was also Krishna's hand in our life to make us fall down and teach us a lesson and bring us closer to him? Would you please throw some light and what should be our perspective in such situation? Firstly, if a person is understanding that he has come down from the path of bhakti due to material desires, it means Krishna's mercy is there to understand that particular thing. Yes. Now, if you're analyzing why did I fall down, then it's not because of it's not Krishna who is doing the game, because Krishna tries his best to give a lot of opportunities for a living entity to practice bhakti. Tries his best. He'll make a lot of arrangements around. But when a living entity is not able to practice bhakti, why? The only reason is sense gratification. No, I want to enjoy because of that. And because of lack of devotee association. So why a devotee falls down from the path of bhakti? Because he's not taking association of devotees. So if he takes association of devotees, he can never fall down. Never. Never. So a devotee who has accepted a person as his mentor or a shiksha guru, and second, he's always in the association of devotees. That person can never fall out from bhakti. Very, very rare case when he literally punches some devotee and commits some Vaishnava prad, then he'll be thrown out of bhakti. But then, it's a very rare case like that. Very, very rare case. So why the person is coming out of bhakti? Because he has not accepted someone as his shiksha guru or his spiritual master. And second, he's not in constant touch with devotees, constant association with devotees. So Krishna has no role here as such. How can this be seen in context of desire at the end of life? Example, someone desires to be born in US next birth, but none of his family members desire this at the time of death. Who would the close relatives be? This question is almost like, you're asking to Paramatma. Oh, Krishna, please tell me what will happen. I have to read it again to answer your question. Someone desires to be born in US next birth. Okay. So he's desiring. So he's like, he's leaving his body and at the time of death, he has a desire that I want to take birth in US. Okay. But none of his family members desire this at the time of death. Okay. So who would be the close relatives of that person? Okay. So now, see, here you're just talking about desire, but what is the aspect of karma? Karma is also valid, right? See, the concept that we're discussing is not one variable. It has got multiple variables, and these variables are not static. All variables are dynamic. All variables, our desire, our actions, like that's our karma, all of it is, really dynamic. So here multiple things will come into picture. Yes. So if when it comes to his intense desire and suppose his karma supports his desire, so maybe he'll take some birth there, but he has not completed his give and take with some members. So again, after a few lifetimes, he'll come to that person, to complete the give and take. So that give and take need not be just from the past life. It can be from any lifetimes. Any lifetime. Like I gave the example of Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra killed 100 birdlets, 100 lifetimes back when he was a hunter. Yes. And then he got that karma fulfilled after 100 lifetimes. When he got enough pious credits to beget 100 sons, then he got that karma fulfilled. Yes, or reactions fulfilled. So similarly, the answer to your question is this, that, it depends on which lifetime, finally the give and take will complete, or the opportunity will be given to complete the give and take. That's what would be my answer for your question. If we have some balance from past, today's karma session, so question after question is coming. We have some balance from past, God sanctions the desire, okay. But once the balance becomes zero, how God is sanctioning? If God does not allow, then we will never have negative balance. Papa. So Ram Kumar Prabhu, your question is almost like a thesis, Prabhu. If we have some balance from past, okay, God sanctions the desire. No, it's not like that. It's like, when you're talking about balance becoming zero, what do you mean by balance becoming zero? It means that person is practicing bhakti intensely. Only when the person practices bhakti intensely, the balance will become zero. Or else not possible. And when the person practices bhakti intensely, what is his desire? I want to attain you, O Krishna. That is the desire. Correct? Now there is no question. Now there is no question of any other desire coming into picture and Lord sanctioning. Right? So now when the balance has become zero, so we are saying karma has become zero. When does karma become zero? When someone practices bhakti intensely. And what is the result of practicing bhakti intensely? The person will come back to God. Yes. So now there is no question of papa or punya here. Hope you got the answer. Okay. How about responsibilities of being a parent or taking care of old parents? Yeah, whatever is needful, we have to do. We have to do. Without, like for example, a parent. Let me tell you the example of parent. Old parents, yeah, obviously we have to take care. They have taken care of us. So when it comes to being a parent, so yes, we fulfill the responsibility. Like we take care of the kid, we educate the kid, we get that kid married. Done. After that, done. Now, the person, what do you mean by getting attached to the person? Oh, I have to see my grandchildren. I have to see my grandchildren getting married. I want to see my great-grandchildren. Then that person is, he's not talking about responsibility. This is, what was that word? Self. What was that? What Prabhupada said? Self? Self-created duties. This is called a self-created duties. What Prabhupada says. So we should know the limit. What is our responsibility? We should understand what is our responsibility and finish off there. Even Prabhu took responsibility of family. Prabhupada took responsibility of family till 56. Not 58, 56. How do we take this? See, when it comes to Prabhupada, Prabhupada was already detached, even like much before time. And a lot of things were, he already started preaching. So when a person is preaching, So automatically, you know, his entire life's goal has changed. Instead of getting attached to family, now he's getting attached to the mission of the Lord. So if a person is preaching, no problem. Even till the last breath, he can be with the family. What's the problem? Because even if he's there with the family, what is he doing? He's serving Krishna. That's the entire family serving Krishna. So what is the problem? There's no problem at all. So this Vanaprastha, which is there, you know, it's very clearly mentioned for, you know, the materialists who have not realized that what is the goal of life. They have to go, they have to realize this particular thing. This has to be done. For devotees who are practicing, you know, from quite some time, like Prabhupada, right from childhood he was doing, even if he would have remained throughout, you know, with his family, there would have been no problem. Because already he was detached, you know, from the heart. Because he was completely attached to Krishna. He was completely attached to the service of Krishna. So there was no problem for him. So I hope this answers your question, Prabhu. Jaya and Vijay took three births. One in Satyuga, next in Dwapar Yuga, next in Treta, correct? From one Yuga to another Yuga, there is lot of years. From one birth to another birth, where were Jaya and Vijay? Yeah, so it is mentioned in Shastra, they were there in the body of the Lord. They were there in the body of the Lord. And when the night time would come, you know, they would manifest. When we kill an animal, we are just killing its body, not its soul. Then why is killing of animals for meat is bad? But who gave us the sanction or who gave us the right to kill anybody? This body which we own is also not ours. So what to talk about animal body? Who gave us the right to kill that body? So none of us have been given that authority. See that Gautam Buddha's pastime, if you remember, there was a person called Angulimal. Now Angulimal, what he would do is, he would kill people and then he would cut the fingers of people whom he has killed and he would make a garland, he would wear garland of the fingers. So Anguli or Ungli basically means finger in Hindi and Mala means garland. So he would make a Mala of Ungli, Mala of fingers and he would wear. So Gautam Buddha saw him and he wanted to teach him a lesson. So Gautam Buddha called and then he started talking to him. And then since Gautam Buddha was a great saint, and already that person's heart melted. And then Gautam Buddha said, go and pluck a leaf from that tree. And then he came, he plugged the leaf and he came to Gautam Buddha and showed the leaf. And then Gautam Buddha said, go and fix it up again. Yes. Then that person said, I cannot do this. How can I do this? So that time Gautam Buddha said, if you cannot fix it, who has given you the right to pluck it? That is what he said. So if we cannot give life to animal, who has given us the right not to take the life of the animal? Yeah. So that's the answer to your question. Okay, today's attendance is 79. Okay. Why does Krishna do something only when asked by pure devotees? Is Krishna not responsible? See, Krishna is very much responsible. But now when it comes to pure devotees' desire, you know, is selfless. And their desire is for the benefit of the entire humanity. So Krishna fulfills that desire. And the pure devotees have completely surrendered to Krishna. There is no doubt about that. They've completely surrendered to Krishna. And now they're completely dependent on Krishna. Now Krishna has no option. He has to fulfill their desires. But when it comes to other living entities, they're independent. They're not dependent. What do you mean by pure devotee? Pure devotee means completely dependent on Krishna. Now Krishna has no option. Like for example, a child is completely dependent on the mother. Like a small kid, completely dependent on the mother. So now the small kid, you know, is asking for food, suppose. So mother will immediately prepare and give the child. But now when the kid grows up and suppose he has a fight at home, you know, mother knows anyways, you know, this person is earning, he might have money, he'll go to a restaurant and eat. You know, she'll also not bother much. But when it comes to a small kid who's completely dependent, you know, she would. When a grown-up person, you know, is independent, he would not. So the pure devotees are like the small innocent kid who's completely dependent on Krishna. He's completely dependent on Krishna. So completely dependent on Krishna. So Krishna has no option but to take care of them to fulfill their needs. And also, their desires are for the well-being of the entire society. For the entire humanity. And when it comes to Krishna being responsible, Krishna is always responsible. Krishna wants to fulfill the desires of the living entity. So that is the reason he's sanctioning. Yes. So when we say that, why does Krishna do something only when asked by pure devotees? Yes. So he does it for pure devotees for sure. Now without seeing the karma aspect, but when it comes to materialists, he's anyways doing, but the only thing is seeing the karma aspect. Yes, that is the difference. So let me give another angle to this. Pure devotees means zero karma. Okay, so now when they're desiring something, so Krishna cannot check how much karma is there, and he has to anyways give. But when it comes to other living entities like us, who have not yet become pure devotees, or materialists for that matter, for them the karma credits are there, so Krishna will try to nicely manipulate and see, okay, this much karma, this much desire, let me sanction this desire. Yes. So hope this answers your question. I gave 2-3 angles to the question. Okay, so we are done.